everyone. This is Andy Heyer with Dorsey Wright Money Management. Today is Friday, April 19th. I am joined by Mike Moody, our Senior Portfolio Manager. Welcome to the podcast, Mike.
Thanks, Andy.
Great. Today we wanted to talk about something that's gathering more and more attention. It's a concept of investing called smart beta, an approach that's said to combine the best of passive and the best of active investing. Let's start with just a definition. What is smart beta? And also, if you would, maybe talk about how it differs from active management.
Well, I think smart beta is kind of a catch-all term for alternative indexing methods that try to get excess return over traditional cap weighting methodologies. I think that the primary difference between smart beta and active management is in the discipline of the indexing approach. I think that, or at least that's generally how it's been used. A lot of active management is discretionary, and they could theoretically do anything. Smart beta usually is a very specific, defined type of factor return that's attempting to be captured that's different than a traditional cap-weighted index.
So, for example, you could have an active manager who focuses on different factors, different metrics, fundamental and technical, at different parts of the cycle just based on their discretion. They would be an active manager, but that's not smart. That's not factor-based investing or smart beta. Talk about, you know, some of the different ways that we see this. Relative strength is something that we're obviously very familiar with. We've been managing the PowerShares Technical Leaders Indexes for a number of years now. PDP came out 6 years ago. But relative strength is not the only factor. What are some of the other factors that are that are gaining some attention that people are using to invest?
Well, I think in addition to relative strength, factor returns that are out there that there are smart beta vehicles to try to capture would be things like value and low volatility. The small capitalization factor is one that's also commonly cited in the industry, although now you see more things like small cap value where they're actually trying to define it even more strictly.
In looking at what are the characteristics of each of these different factors, I mean, can you offer some ideas on the types of markets where each of those different factors might outperform, different characteristics of each of the different factors from a volatility standpoint?
It depends a lot on the markets. Some of the factors are fairly universal, like momentum. Momentum tends to do well when markets are trending. But if they correct gradually, momentum tends to outperform even on the upside. Value is a factor that tends to be mean reverting. And so a lot of times in a choppy market, value performs fairly well. We see often value lagging in a strong market, but outperforming in a weak one. Low volatility is a newer factor out there, and it tends to have lower volatility both on the downside and the upside, but because of the asymmetric nature of how markets work, that tends to work okay. So there are a variety of things, and I know we've written about this in the blog and talked about it before, but one of the interesting things about some of these factors is that they don't have excess returns that are correlated, and so they often work well together as well.
In terms of how that ends up, you think about a client who's trying to, yes, they're trying to earn some returns, they're trying to to grow their money, but they also are concerned and interested in how they arrive at that endpoint, you know, 20, 30 years down the road. And that really gets into diversification. You know, one of the approaches to diversification that's been embraced by the industry for decades is the idea of style box investing. So you mix, you know, large cap growth, large cap value, mid cap growth, mid cap value, small growth, small value. And it seems to me, you know, one of the big criticisms, it just seems like it has not achieved the level of diversification that people were hoping for. You know, at the end of the day, they're all cap-weighted indexes. You're getting some diversification benefits, but I think not nearly as much as what some people had hoped to achieve. When you look at diversifying a portfolio by factor as opposed to by style box, what are the potential benefits or characteristics of how that would be different?
I think the benefits can be pretty significant. You're exactly right that when you look at style boxes, which are really an outgrowth of the Fama French research of, you know, large cap, small cap value growth, they broke everything into style box so that, you know, there weren't any stocks that were excluded. And it turns out, as you point out, they're still cap-weighted, and they're also still fairly correlated. When you look at the way people break up factor returns now, and I'll use our technical leaders index as an example, that breaks out the relative strength factor, but it focuses only on the top 100 stocks based on our relative strength metric. So you're getting everything in the middle is just excluded. And the same is true of many of these low volatility or value exchange traded funds that are out there now trying to capture a particular factor. They're not cap weighted. They're often factor weighted, and they're really focused on the subset of strongest stocks. And so you're missing all that stuff in the middle, and that creates less correlation typically, and that, as you pointed out, can often improve portfolios.
And I think, you know, from a volatility standpoint, it by combining those different pure factors, you're not necessarily, just because you focus exclusively on deep value for one portion and maybe relative strength for another and low volatility for another, you are not necessarily increasing the overall standard deviation of the portfolio because, as you pointed out, the correlation of excess returns is often negative, just meaning they're outperforming at different parts of the cycle. I think this offers some real ways for advisors to differentiate themselves in terms of how they construct a portfolio for clients, bringing some real expertise in the portfolio construction and asset allocation part of the client relationship. One thing that we've talked about and a mantra that you hear all the time is that active managers don't outperform. You know, you've got all these statistics over rolling 10-year periods, X percentage of managers don't outperform. And there's just a real, you hear this periodically, you know, why try? Don't even try active management. Just use passive cap-weighted indexing as your approach to investing. Why is that? You've written about this topic, about how just saying active managers don't outperform, it's an incomplete statement. What did you mean by that?
Well, you're right that you read this a lot, especially when people are trying to pitch the idea of cap-weighted indexing. But the statement is really incomplete, and if you're honest, what you mean to say is active managers don't outperform in aggregate. There certainly are managers that outperform, but those are also offset by some managers that underperform. And in aggregate, yeah, it's true, active management doesn't outperform, but that includes big batches of what we just talked about, people who are using discretion not necessarily wisely. Maybe there are institutional constraints where they have very low active share, or they're afraid to deviate very much from the benchmark for career risk reasons. And so those managers tend not to outperform. But as you've pointed out, when you look at things that are focused on factors related to outperformance, like you get these pure factor returns for relative strength or for value or for low volatility, often there is outperformance. And I think in one of the pieces I wrote on the blog, you know, I pointed out it's very much like looking at a sample of 10,000 people to see how many of them can dunk a basketball and then conclude that it's impossible because only a few random people can dunk. Again, it's incomplete. Maybe people on average can't dunk in aggregate, but if you select for dunking related factors like people who are 6'8" or taller and between 18 and 25 years old, you're going to find a lot of people who can dunk. And that's very much like focusing in on the factors that even Pham and French agree outperform.
Well, that's great. And I think that analogy really helps people bring it home, because the reality is there are more enlightened ways to approach investing. There are better ways to approach the, seeking to outperform and seeking to improve the diversification impact of a portfolio. Well, very good. Thank you very much, Mike.
Thanks, Andy.